Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Today on a chilling episode of Real Ghost Stories Online that will make your parents think you worship the devil himself. And let's just admit it, you really are worshiping the devil. Trust me, I know everything, and I am going to tell on you. When a couple embarks on a weekend getaway filled with adventures, the last thing they expect is to have a paranormal encounter with the dead. How do the couple manage to stay grounded and make it through a terrifying ordeal? Deep in an abandoned coal mine. We'll find out today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. Welcome to the program. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts, you don't miss any episodes of the show, as well as our advanced episodes, if you want that. If you want access to the archive, the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories, and exclusive EPP bonus episodes that come out once a week exclusively for our supporters, packed with some of our creepiest stories that we get, and they're only for EPP members. Get all that at ghostpodcast.com. Or on the Patreon website, the link to our Patreon page also at ghostpodcast.com. It's Tony and Carol Hughes with you on today's episode of the show. What's going on?
Well, Tony.
Yeah.
Sorry. Just as I went to answer you, my cat jumped up and she had her butt between me and the microphone.
They always have a real strategic place of showing their asses to you.
And I'm like at trying to get to the microphone, but her butt's just right there, and it made me laugh.
I think it's like it's comedic timing. They're like, if I go right here now and pounce up, lift the ass, perfect timing.
Put it in her face, right next to the microphone.
Boom.
So, you know, and I'm like, you know, it's not like I have a ton of extra space right here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't just push her off. Said
they're talking to a cat's ass.
She's very adorable. It's funny because both, like, my cats, because my house got pretty, you know, pretty sad, obviously. Mm-hmm. But between the two of them, I have, like, the two coolest cats. So I really do. You have a good cat.
I do. Bubbles, yes.
Bubbles. That's
fun. Bubbles. Bubbles the cat.
It's a really good name for a cat.
It is. Yeah, I remember when Harper was little, come here, Bubbles. Bubbles, come here.
Come here.
Come here, come Bubbles. Here. Bubbles. Bubbles, you like flying?
Well, then my cat, I named my cat Rizzo after Anthony Rizzo, my favorite baseball player, because I'm a big Chicago Cubs fan. Then they go and trade him. So my favorite baseball player now plays for the Yankees.
Yeah.
So my cat is named after a Yankees player, which, like, let's be real. Unless you are a Yankees fan, nobody likes the Yankees unless you're an actual Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. So that's a little disturbing to me. But I still like Anthony Rizzo. I just don't like that he plays for the Yankees. But my cat's named after him anyway.
Well, it's funny because I have some family members who always name their cats after the wrong people. Now, it starts out very innocent, and then it really goes to shit because it turns out the people that they name the cats after end up not having such a great thing. I mean, take, for example, my aunt who had a tabby in the 80s named OJ. They used to love watching The Juice on television. And then it just all kind of went to shit after that. You know, a couple years later, this was more towards the 90s. And they like giving the cat two names, like a first and a last name, because it's a cat. And they named one that after someone that they really admired and thought really gave them some hope and some health. Jared Fogle. They named the cat Jared Fogle.
Because we love Subway.
And then the cat, lived out the rest of its life. This one I didn't quite get. They were kind of religious-y, but they did name a Siamese Jim Baker. So that one also was a little bit off, but
And then more recently, they have the cat named Duggar.
Yes. Well, that's a new one. so we don't talk about that, but there was this really great one. there was this great one, and it was a really, it was kind of a crazy cat, did a lot of stuff. They named it The Cause. And, that one also didn't age well, but, they had a lot of cats. The cats had nothing to do with the celebrities, which were they're named after and the crimes in which they committed. Although I do believe some of them did feel guilty about it later in life, just having the name association. And I can only imagine the shame that those cats would get from the other cats when all those things came out.
You put a weird thought in my head because there are probably people who have named their pets after mass murderers or something. Somebody's got a cat named Charlie Manson.
Yeah. Well, and then there was a stray down the road named David Duke, which was also a very bizarre cat, really seemed to have problems with the other cats of color. And sometimes you would see the cats wearing hoods that were hanging out by him. It was just kind of
weird. Effed up.
It was totally effed up.
You crack me up because you'll start telling a story and I think that you're telling me a true story. And then I'm like, oh, this is not a true story.
But it could be. It could be. My mom had her cat, and she just recently changed its name. She had one named R. Kelly, that she really, because she really liked "I Believe I Can Fly," the song, and that one that he did with Celine Dion.
She's yelling, "Here, kitty, kitty, R. Kelly, R. Kelly,"
and she'd be on the porch and R. Kelly, and the neighbors were kind of getting concerned, and then everything, came out, and everybody pretty much accepted that it was, R. Kelly. But the weird thing is she's not up on the news all the time. And she ended up, she tried to name it after, one of her, her friends. And it actually, it didn't turn out well. Her last friend's name was Epstein. So she's out on the porch, Epstein, come here, Epstein. Yeah,
Jeffrey,
bring it to me, Epstein. And it was really, it was weird. It was weird. So, cat got named again. Cat got named one more time, and now its name is just Mo. So that's all it goes by, just Mo.
I feel better about my cat named Rizzo after Yankees player.
This is Mo. R. Kelly to Epstein, now Mo. That's the story of cats. And mom's going, I do not have a cat named that. I don't have a cat named Mo. I understand, Mom. It's a satire. Let's go to our first story of the day. It starts out several months ago. My fiance and I went on a tour of Lackawanna Coal Mine in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I think the only reason I know how to say Lackawanna Coal Mine is because I think I heard it in The Office.
Oh, because I was impressed the way you just said that.
I think it's been mentioned or something. This was a really cool experience and very inexpensive too. $10 a person, I think. I have pictures I could send. Anyway, they seat you in a steel open-air trolley-type car that runs on a train track and is pulled by cables. Never seen such a contraption. Seats maybe 20-some people, I'm estimating. This thing takes you into a tunnel in the hillside and gradually goes down into the earth. As the car descends, the outside light at the end of the tunnel gets smaller and further away until it disappears completely. The passage is very narrow. It gives the impression you're being swallowed by some great long-necked beast and is a bit unnerving all on its own. I'd strongly suggest this claustrophobic avoid this trip. Once down in the mine, the car drops you off and leaves. Also unnerving. We all wear hard hats, which seems like wearing a seatbelt in an airplane. How much is that really going to help if a mile or so of earth lands on you? There's an older 60-ish-year-old gentleman that's our guide and ex-miner. He walks us through a fascinating tour, explaining the ventilation system, the support structures, basic mine procedures, etc. He goes over safety issues, how and why the canaries were used, which was not what I thought, by the way, where the miners took breaks, and other aspects of life in the mine. While I was mildly anxious while descending into the mine, a few minutes of being down there and I was fine. It was way too cool and interesting to be anything but excited. Plus, my fiancé kind of inspires a feeling of safety in general, being a muscular 250 pounds and a doctor. So I was good, and the only misgivings I had were about very practical safety issues, not ghosts. I swear nothing of that nature had remotely crossed my mind, so here we are, having been walking through the mine a good 20 minutes or more, and we come to this area that the guide explains is used as an airlock. Bear with me, I'm not sure how to shorten this part. Basically, in the tunnel in front of us is a set of double doors. We go through those doors, and once inside, it looks like about 30 feet. I had another set of double doors. So basically, as part of the very vital ventilation system, this area was needed to keep the air flowing the right way. Inside the first set of double doors was a stool where a young 11 to 14-year-old boy would sit. His only job was when a coal cart needed to come through, he'd open the first set of doors, let the cart into the tunnel segment, then close the doors behind it before opening the second set and letting them out of the airlock. The important thing was to never let both sets of doors be open simultaneously. While no immediate disaster would occur, it would disrupt the ventilation flow and worsen the air quality in the mine. So it was that we were coming up to this section when all of a sudden it started to feel bad. Now, here I'll mention that I seem to be a bit sensitive to things. Basically, feelings that are strong tend to be correct. I most certainly am no psychic or any such thing. Anyway, at first, I did not recognize this as me sensing anything. I thought, oh God, we're suffocating. Something is wrong. The fans have stopped or something. But then I looked around, my fiance and the rest of the group were fine, laughing, whispering, and shuffling along. All I can say is it felt like a feeling of profound heaviness or pressure had descended on me. It would have been easy to panic, and I think I couldn't breathe, but I detached and was objective and realized I could, in fact, breathe just fine. Finally, after this continuing for about 5 minutes of our walk, part of which was during the tour, an explanation of the airlock area, I mentioned it to my fiancé. Everyone, including him, seemed fine. I didn't want to sound crazy, so I said, "Do you feel okay?" He said, "Yeah, why?" And then only because of the intensity of it, I went out on a limb and said, "I don't know how to explain it. It just feels really heavy here, like the pressure changed or something." Ironically, he said, "Maybe it's haunted." Now, I had neither said nor considered that until that moment. And I know he was mostly, if not completely, joking. Please remember, this area was no way airtight, despite the name, and does not explain my feeling. In addition, the feeling started before and lifted well after this area. Anyway, we continued about 40 to 50 feet down the tunnel after the airlock area, and the oppressive heaviness began to lift. I was very relieved, but wondering what was that. But none of that is the reason for this story. The guide brought our group to another stop where he was going to talk a bit. In this case, it was to point out how completely dark it was down there. Now, when he brought us to his stop, it was right about the time I was starting to feel better and less heaviness, for lack of a better term. So I'd have preferred to move on a bit. As it was, when he brought us to a stop, I was listening to him, but watching the tunnel we had just come through. It just stretched out straight behind us, and me kind of absently kept staring that way. I guess wondering why it felt so different back there. Meanwhile, our guide goes on to explain that the miners were taught that if the lights went out, there was a protocol to follow. You see, there are low-hanging support beams overhead and potentially dangerous tools to the side. In the event of no lighting, it's utterly and completely dark down there. It'd be easy for a minor to become disoriented, lost, or injured, so the protocol was for the miners to get down on their hands and knees and feel the railway tracks and crawl out, making their way along the tracks. Can you imagine? That alone would make me find alternate employment. To demonstrate the point that it is darker than anything in our normal experience down there, our guide shut down the lights completely. Now, during all this, I continued to face backwards and was very last person in the back of the group, so I had a clear view of the tunnel behind us. I was not creeped out or thinking of anything at this point. I had leaned over to my fiancé when I realized what the guide was about to do and said, "Just listen, I bet everyone gets really uncomfortable really fast." Sure enough, the lights were out for all of 2 seconds when a murmur started in the group, previously nervously laughing and talking, very uncomfortable with the total darkness. So I'm pretty sure I was actually smiling at this exhibit of human nature when the lights came up, but I was still facing the tunnel behind us. When the lights came up, I saw something just for a few seconds, but I saw it. That was a form, the size and shape of a preteen child, which seemed to duck and nearly simultaneously scoot behind one of the support beams that ran along the ceiling and down the wall, like it was hiding. Thing is, it was black. There are many shadows in that tunnel, but it was much more blacker than any of the surrounding shadows. Blacker than black. And I just darted behind that beam and stayed there. I said nothing. I did not feel alarmed or scared. I was kind of in a state of wonder. Kept looking like the group began to move forward. I kept looking back to see if it would reappear, but apparently it was a one-time show. Now, to be honest, I have not yet told my fiancé about this because I wasn't sure what he would think. However, I could hardly wait to get home and talk to my 17-year-old daughter about it. But as I thought about it and tried to figure out how to describe it, I realized something I maybe should not even mention this part because I know it doesn't make sense. But when I considered my description a solid shadow, something shaped like a person but blacker than black, I realized I had seen this or something like it before. This was a childhood memory, something I remember trying to figure out of how to explain it to an adult. Of this, I'm absolutely sure. I remember trying to figure out how to explain this thing before, yet that is all I remember. This all happened before I found your show. Needless to say, when you guys started discussing shadow people, I was floored. No shit, this is an actual thing, huh? Of many questions that come to mind, I'll pose this one. If shadow people were never human, why did the one in mine seem to be the size and shape of a child? Was it just appearing that way because it heard the story of the boys that tended to the airlock and was just trying to look human? Did a little research. Boys have died in mines in that area. Whether or not in that mine was unclear. I've heard since looking into it that some people think all shadow people are evil and non-human entities. Yes, that area felt oppressive and bad, however, when I saw this shadow boy, there was no feeling attached to it, and its movements were exactly like that of a child trying to hide before being spotted. Thoughts? I have no idea what to make of this, and why do I remember seeing one before? My daughter was visited by a man as an infant, which is another story. I wonder if that was a shadow person. So many questions. Thank you for a truly great show. I know that was very long. If it's too long to use, I totally understand. I'd still love to know what you think. Well, I've never been under the assumption that all shadow people are evil or bad. I would honestly say that my guess would be a much higher percentage were people.
Well, I do know that if I was to see one, I would find it scary.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the whole story, like, I don't even think I could do a excursion, whatever, like, what do you call it? Like a little trip into a mine. I don't think I could do it.
Did you ever do the one in, Hutchinson?
No.
Oh.
I did go through Dover, the White Cliffs of Dover, and there was, like they built a World War II bunker basically into those cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that shit, it was dark in there.
Yeah.
Like same thing, like when they shut out the lights, or I've been in a cave before and they shut out the lights, but I don't like caves. I don't like any of that stuff.
Yeah.
At least the one in England was historical, mm-hmm. but it was still creepy. It was really creepy.
Yeah.
But that whole thing was just creepy to me. Like just going into the mine and, you know, and like what a, I can't even imagine doing that kind of work. It would just be so difficult.
Yeah.
Physical. I mean, and
yeah.
Just, and a lot of people have died in mines.
Well, yeah. And if you don't die in the mine, you get black lung and cough it out for the next 10 years and you have a nice lifespan to 40.
Yeah.
So.
But they pay you well.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I mean, it's one of those. I mean, today I'm sure practices are a little different, I hope. But you know, that's what life was, you know, in many areas. That's how you made a living. You did that or you died.
Exactly.
And it was, you know, it's, yeah, it's just a,
and then the whole idea of a young boy would have to just sit there all day.
Yeah.
And be responsible for opening one door, making sure the other one was shut.
And he,
like,
made it to,
can you imagine like your kid having to do that all day?
And he made it to 25 before the black lung took over.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just those horrific conditions.
So I could absolutely see the whole mine being haunted.
Very much so.
Like creepy. So, you know, to me, as the story's going on and she sees, you know, something super creepy like that, I thought of it, it was not a good thing.
I think, like, it was a little boy that she saw that, you know, is probably still running around down there.
Which makes me sad.
Sure.
Like,
what would you rather have? Ghost of little boy or demon in the mine?
I think I'd rather have, I guess, the little boy if I had to pick.
Yeah.
Harmless ghost boy or demon.
Yeah, I mean, you got to consider the tourism side of this here. Harmless ghost boy, demon, that could work out not very well eventually. That could end up cutting back on your attendance, and you don't want that.
Or it might get you more.
Just depends. Depends what everyone's looking for. If you can, like, open up maybe the mind to maybe, like, satanic parties or conferences, you know, things like that. Satanic story hour for the kids every Wednesday at 3:40. Free goldfish, you know, something like that, then you could probably, you know, really make a thing of it.
Well, there's a certain group of people who'd rather have demon story hour than drag queen story hours.
That's true.
There's that.
That is true. Yeah. But a satanic sushi hour that where, you know, they have a sushi bar that's set up down there by Satanists. And but they do welcome the general public.
That was funny.
Yeah, it's like anyone is welcome. You're welcome to come in. They're not gonna force Satan on you or anything. They just want to make sushi and make you. Just,
and it's kind of like Scientology. We're not forcing this on you, but let's have a conversation. Like, let's do your personality test.
We'll do some e-meters with you and have some satanic sushi that's in the shape of pentagrams. You're like, how the fuck did you make that sushi like a pentagram? And they don't tell you. They just look at you with lizard eyes.
And it's like, we would tell you if you're a part of our club.
Exactly. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. These are the ways to make a underground coal mine work as a as a business. I went
and charged more than $10 to do it.
I did the tour of the salt mine in Hutchinson, Kansas. The day,
I hear it's cool.
The day it opened, I was one of the first people there as a like a public person. It was pretty neat. I remember they were getting out some of the movie props that they store down there because, like, I think Warner Brothers or somebody has a giant vault down there.
Mm-hmm.
That all the master reels, I think the master reels of, like, Friends were down there, and so
Wizard
many
of Oz is down there.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's super, super guarded as well. But they had the one of the things from the movie Twister out. And it wasn't like in a cage or anything. It was like literally just sitting there. And so, of course, we took a bunch of photos where I was like holding onto it and looking like I was flying through the, you know, the museum, holding onto the thing from Twister. And what else? They had like some other, I don't remember. There was like some outfits and stuff like that. But it was interesting. And very fucking dark.
Very dark.
I was amazed how far those things go out in like square footage. They can be like under a whole fucking city.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people just like picture tunnels. No. These things, like, they go out and they span and they're bigger than Walmart. And that's pretty fucking big. And it's underground and it's about like 8 feet high or so. And it's just, and it's like squares almost where there's pillars, of rock that kind of hold it up and they just kind of span themselves out for many, 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 many miles. I forgot how many miles they said that thing went, but it was like, holy shit, and creepy and just, yeah, it's a lot. I don't know that I'd want to visit it again. I think.
See, and I just can't, like, that underground stuff, yeah. And like, oh.
That visit from 15 years ago, I think, was sufficient enough for me. Let's go to our caller here. Hi, let's hear your ghost story.
Hey, Tony. My name is Jordan. I'm calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I've been listening to the show for probably about 5 years now, and I'm a big fan. And I just heard an episode about a guy who watched The Grudge and then started experiencing some paranormal stuff. And I just wanted to share my story because it actually is kind of similar. So my story began, I was about, I think, 13 years old. And I have always been kind of like dark and actually very spiritual, but I've always liked horror movies and creepy stuff. And I was at my grandmother's house and she was like, hey, do you want to watch The Exorcist? Have you ever seen The Exorcist? And I was like, okay, yeah, I like horror movies, so sure, let's go for it. So she put it on and we were watching it, and I was doing okay for like the first half. I was like, I don't know. Actually, I have never finished it. But I got to the part where she walks down the stairs backwards and I was like, nope, I'm done. So, and which is unusual for me because I would normally watch the whole movie through. But at that point, I was just like, nope, something about this is just not okay with me. So that happened. And sometime after that, I started experiencing like really, really acute anxiety, and it was mostly just at night. And what would happen is that I would try to go to bed and I would just not be able to sleep for most of the night. I was falling asleep at like 3 or 4 in the morning every night. And I started having really bad nightmares and really gory nightmares. And like in them, sometimes my family would be possessed and like trying to come after me and different things like that. But during the times when I was laying awake in bed at night, I would have this really overwhelming sense of like being watched, and that I could definitely sense like there was some kind of presence up in the top corner of my bedroom, and it felt like it was just really oppressive, and it felt like it was just waiting for me to fall asleep. So I had a really hard time for, I think it was a few months at least, that was going on. And there was even times when like I went to my parents' bedroom too, and I was like, should I knock on the door and wake them up and piss them off? But I think I only did that once. But so yeah, I was having this really difficult time, and you know, being the dark kind of kid that I was, I kind of enjoyed the nightmares. I know that sounds weird to say, but some of them were very like surreal and almost Alice in Wonderland like, and they were kind of cool. And I used to draw pictures of the stuff that I saw, and they were kind of interesting. But the no sleep kind of thing was becoming a problem. And my mom was very aware. I was telling her about my anxieties and stuff. And there was one night where I had like a, I guess it would be a panic attack. And I was hanging around in her bedroom and I just had this crazy panic attack and I was crying and I had that overwhelming sense that there was something in the doorway. And I was just like kind of crying and pointing to the doorway and she was like freaking out because she didn't know what to do. And I don't even remember how that episode ended. But she got freaked out enough at that point to like say that we needed to do something about it. And what she decided was, I forgot to mention, there was a time too that I walked into the garage door when I came home after school and I saw just a flicker
being
of
with Michael.
Somebody sitting in the little, my parents had chairs in the garage at the time. And I just caught a glimpse of someone sitting in it and that glimpse, it looked like they were wearing a like top hat almost, which I thought was weird and I just kind of blew it off at the time. But yeah, so after that one really bad panic attack, my mom decided that we were going to pray a novena, which is a like a Catholic prayer that is kind of specifically for a purpose and there's different types of them. And so she had me and my brother come and pray with her and we had to pray several times for, I think it was like 24 hours and we had to pray at certain intervals. And we did the novena and after that, I completely stopped having that anxiety at night. I didn't have any more like panic attacks like that. I don't recall seeing any more flickers of shadows or anything. But I have like continued to have experiences throughout my life. It's not like that completely ended everything. It just ended the oppressive darkness at that time. So I have lots of other stories, but I just wanted to share that because it was similar to the one I just heard. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. I really enjoy the podcast and everyone that's involved. And I'm so excited that I finally got to call and share a story with you guys. Good luck to everyone and have a good evening. Bye.
Thanks for sharing that story with us. And no, that was not an EVP in the middle of it.
It was just at the moment that was going to scare the crap out of everybody. Like, because I'm just like, because she goes, then I walked into the garage and then there's that weird thing. I was like, what the hell was it?
Clicking on a link that my girlfriend sent me to, I don't know what it was. There's probably some cooking video, but I didn't realize that the sound was going to go blasting. So
that's what you thought. So it couldn't have happened at a worse time.
Yeah. Sorry.
So like, it's interesting to me because like watching The Exorcist, like, you know, depending on your age, if you watch something like that at a certain age, like that can, that shit can really stick with you.
Yeah.
And be very impactful and very powerful and could do all the things, you know, that lack of sleep. Cause then once you get something in your head that's really scary like that, like it's not a night or two. You can get into a cycle.
Yeah. And you want more. You want more. Darkness.
And you want it to go away so bad that you're not letting it go away because you're constantly worried about it.
Yeah, it's worrying about worrying, essentially.
Yeah. So, you know, so I don't know, like, how, like, could that have just triggered the whole thing then by doing what they did at the end could have given her more comfort and kind of, okay, we did something about it and was able to let some of that go. Or is it all paranormal? You know?
Could be a mix, I think, of various things all in once in that.
And she's drawn to that stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. So my guess is, you know, she's got some abilities,
yeah.
I would guess. You know, where she's rather sensitive,
mm-hmm.
obviously. And that part where in The Exorcist, she was watching the 25th anniversary one. Because in the original, they didn't have her walking down the stairs like that.
They did it.
No. And they put it back in because it was too much. And it was like in the 70s or whatever.
Yeah.
They hired a... That's actually somebody doing it. I think they might have sped it up a little bit. But they hired, like, you know, some contortionist type of person
mm-hmm.
to do that scene in the movie. Because it is effective and creepy.
I'm looking it up. I want to see it. The Exorcist original spider walk scene. Okay.
Burke, didn't he tell you?
Didn't who tell me?
Burke, isn't... What's Burke got to do with it?
What
there
does Burke
anybody
have to
here,
do?
So when I went to get the Thorazine, I had him stay with her and...
Haven't heard.
Priest comes.
Oh, this is just a trigger for everybody right now. Like, I
oh
can't even
God.
Hear Megan's little voice.
When I touch your forehead, open your...
Did she go down the stairs yet? Oh, they. Oh, this is one where they cut it. Or do we? Are the stairs coming up?
Come forward.
I just want to see her walk down the stairs. This one, spider walk. Oh.
The shot of the girl walking
behind the
backwards
scenes.
Down the stairs, which we couldn't use at the time.
They did hire
because
somebody.
Because the cable showed.
He didn't believe
it was
did
so bright. When we did that.
Oh my goodness! That's they used a cable though.
Because I think, because the way she's going down the stairs, like, that would have been really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh. Wow.
It's creepy.
It is. It is very...
And I can totally see how you could watch that when you're young mm-hmm. and be really affected by it.
Harper watches it every other night. She gets out the popcorn and then she criticizes the movie.
She makes fun of it.
All of its flaws. And then she takes notes and then posts angrily on message boards. No, I'm kidding.
If I was to do it,
here's what you did wrong. That one did stand up. I don't even know that we finished that one. She wanted to see it, and then I think we got like halfway through, and she's like, "I know, I'm good. Thank you, Dad. This has been
it's creepy.
It
it's,
is.
It's very creepy.
It still stands up today. All right, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Access to all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, and so much more. All you got to do is go to ghostpodcast.com and click Become an EPP. You can sign up through Patreon or on the website ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for all of us at Real Ghost Stories Online, Tony Bruschi, thanks for listening.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.